Dr. Michael Rubin, great to be with you. I know you say to call you Michael, but then I feel like I'm not honoring your degrees. So that's
yeah. But you know, when you have a PhD in history, you get paid to predict the past, and you know how PhDs are. We get it. I mean, historians get it right only about half the time.
I gotcha, but you get it right a lot of the time, and you've been accused of getting it wrong, especially when it comes to Iran, and when you have people like Chris Matthews and others who insult you for years saying you get it wrong, and then you're like, wait a second, I got it right. You see, this has been revealed. They never really complied. And we now have the Iranian government not complying with the rest of the members who are still in the Iranian deal with missiles. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, when it comes to the missiles, the problem, look, what's the big deal about the missiles? That's the basic issue. To have a nuclear program, you need three main components: warhead design, enrichment, and delivery systems. It was actually Secretary of State John Kerry who changed the wording of previous UN deals in order to say that, you know, missiles might be okay in certain ways. It really was a sleight of hand which empowered Iran. And so at the very least, you know, they're not complying. They are working on nuclear-capable missiles. But the way the wording changed said, you know, it's not a matter of it being a nuclear-capable missile. It has to be designed for nuclear weapons. And the Iranians can say, well, it's designed for fireworks. It's designed to deliver satellites. And it's easy to make an excuse, and that's what they're doing.
Well, it's an easy thing to make an excuse, but since we have that dogged press that hounds all administrations, both Republican and Democrat, to give us the truth, they saw right through it, reported it, and that's why we didn't go through with the nuclear deal with Iran, right?
Well, that's absolutely the case, but you know, while we spend so much time debating in Congress, for example, whether or not the nuclear deal was a good idea or whether or not the Trump administration's withdrawal was a good idea or not, what we forget is because of these so-called sunset clauses, these expirations within the nuclear deal, even if we stayed in, by the end of President Trump's second term, or if he's a one-term president, by the end of his successor's first term, this deal's going to start to expire. But you know, the bigger problem with the nuclear deal isn't simply, or the bigger violation, isn't simply the missiles. It's this nuclear archive, which has faded from the headlines, but now analysis has been done by independent researchers. They found that the Iranians had lied. They had been trying to build five nuclear weapons. Believe it or not, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, still hasn't inspected the archives. They're just sitting on their rear ends in Vienna, Austria. It really is shocking. I don't want to rabbit on, but the reason we know this archive is illegal is because there's precedence as to countries coming in from the nuclear cold. South Africa in 1991 gave up six nuclear weapons. It took the IAEA 19 years to certify them as complete, even when Nelson Mandela was fully compliant with them. But as part of their coming in from the cold, they had to give up their nuclear archives. So the notion that Iran was allowed to keep theirs is absolutely bonkers.
It is bonkers. And the fact is, I was talking about the press to a degree in jest, but you're part of the press in the way of covering these stories and giving us the rest of the story. If we talk about fake news today and a whole host of things, do we believe what we believe? And we think about what we were told about the Iranian nuclear deal. And I'm not just talking about Hollywood and that ridiculous ad. I'm talking about what was the substance of it and actually questioning the veracity of the statements within to the degree that they could be enforced. And that's why we rely on you to tell us, okay, what can they get by with, because they're going to push the limits. You mentioned giving up nuclear weapons. Somebody else who gave up their nuclear weapons was the government of the Ukraine in the Budapest Memorandum, if I'm not mistaken, in the early 90s. And in essence, they did that with the idea that, hey, if Russia starts again, or we have our enemies take advantage of this, we'll have some allies in the way of the United States. First off, are we being an ally and living up to our agreement? And secondly, are you concerned about Vladimir Putin's latest aggression?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Crane. The Budapest Memorandum basically said that the Ukraine would give up its weapons, and in exchange, the United States, Great Britain, and for that matter, Russia, agreed to guarantee its sovereignty over all of its territory. And I mean, they gave up their weapons. the Russians invaded, and we turned the other way. Now, the Trump administration is starting, given these latest Russian outrages, to advance the idea of giving Ukraine the ability to defend itself with lethal force. That's a good thing. But when it comes to sort of the hypocrisy out there with journalism and so forth, a lot of people are still in outrage that President Trump withdrew from the Joint Conference Plan of Action, the so-called Iran nuclear deal. What a lot of people don't realize is, first of all, the Iran nuclear deal wasn't a treaty. Second of all, it wasn't even a normal agreement. It was something called a political agreement. It was never actually signed. So let's think about other political agreements out there, which are corollary. President George W. Bush made an agreement with the Czech Republic and Poland to station anti-ballistic missile radar systems there. Both the Czech government and the Polish government went through tremendous domestic upheaval, but finally agreed to this. President Obama came into office and completely voided the treaty with no hesitation. It was the same type of treaty that the Joint Conference of Plan of Action was. Of course, in that case, the press was silent.
So making a treaty with the Iranian government and recognizing part of that treaty would have been to believe things that would be, say, qualified to the degree of interpretation when it comes to their programs and the status of their programs, as well as the inspections of their program. That's okay, but, or that's good, but the actual, our allies and people that have lived under the Iron Curtain and understanding that the people that have experienced historically this aggression, that we make a promise to them against a foe that we can recognize is not trustworthy in the way of Vladimir Putin, and we bail on that. That seems to me it's puzzling. I'm confounded by our responses to these, and I'm speaking to the mainstream media as well as the Democratic Party.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I would object to even the word treaty there because not only wasn't it a treaty, it wasn't a normal agreement, it was never actually signed. A lot of people don't realize that the Iranians never actually signed the Joint Conference of Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal. They promised to comply with certain other treaties, like the additional protocol of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, but it wasn't required that they do so. I mean, this is the astounding nature of what transpired under the Obama administration. You know, our founding fathers were wise. They understood that treaties should rise to a certain level, and that in order to ensure that they rise to that certain level, the Senate should ratify those treaties. If the Obama administration, if Secretary of State John Kerry had told the Iranians, you know, I'd love to agree to all your demands, but it's never going to pass by Congress, if he used that treaty ramification mechanism to his advantage, he probably could have extracted a better deal. But regardless, this deal would have been expiring. This notion of sunset clauses with a country like the Islamic Republic of Iran is absolutely inane. But I've said it once, I'll say it again, I still think the United States is missing the biggest picture with regard to Iran, and that is, you know, the supreme leader of Iran, who calls himself the deputy of the Messiah on Earth, Crane. He's 79 years old. He's had prostate cancer. He's partially paralyzed from a 1981 assassination attempt. Ayatollahs have a bad habit of living a long life, but they do eventually die. And the way I read the tea leaves, when he does die, the likelihood of a civil war in Iran is growing every day.
Are we doing anything to prepare for that in the way of supporting NGOs and human rights groups with communications equipment and organization ability?
No, we're not. I mean, we're consistently, and this is both a Democratic and a Republican problem, caught flat-footed. You know, if we look over the last several administrations, the George H.W. Bush administration, Bill Clinton's, George W. Bush's, Obama's, their foreign policy legacies were always defined by the problem that no one saw coming when they were running for president. And George H.W. Bush never expected to be in Kuwait or Iraq. Bill Clinton never expected to be in the Balkans. George W. Bush was running as a domestic president. He never expected to be in Iraq and Afghanistan. 9/11 happened. And Barack Obama claimed that he was going to, quote, unquote, end stupid wars. And not only were we still in Iraq and Afghanistan by the end of his term, but we were in Libya and Syria as well. I'm convinced that in this case, you know, there's no guarantee that when the Supreme Leader dies, someone's going to come into his place, which means the Revolutionary Guard could be left all alone. What are they going to do?
It's a great question and something we need to take interest in order to be on it for a major event like this. As you said, nobody expects these things, or they get caught flat-footed because they're not listening to the pulse of the ground or people like you. Tell me this, Michael, final question. Khashoggi, the response from our president, did that encourage Vladimir Putin in the latest aggression in the Crimea?
No, I think Vladimir Putin has agency. He's going to do what he's going to do anyway. I mean, Vladimir Putin invaded Georgia without Khashoggi being killed. He invaded the Ukraine without Khashoggi being killed during the Obama administration, of course. He's going to be him. The problem with Russia is in a dire economic situation. And in order to distract the Russian people, wrap them around the flag, Vladimir Putin does one of these invasions. What we never see after the invasion is just the sheer expense of the occupation. And so you've got a situation where, in order to distract the public from the economy, Vladimir Putin invades someplace, but that just makes running the country more expensive, and that speeds up the cycle. That's the danger we're in with Russia right now.
What do you remember most about George H.W. Bush? Final question, 30 seconds.
You know, just what a statesman he was. I sometimes agreed with him, I sometimes disagreed with him, but I still remember as a college freshman sitting in the TV lounge and watching the Berlin Wall come down.
Yeah. Wow. Michael Rubin, Dr. Michael Rubin, if you want to know about what's going on in foreign policy in the Middle East and otherwise, read his books, read his articles. Thank you so much. Great to be with you, my friend.